Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and a chronic giggler during sex. Who are you?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger and someone who talks way too much during sex.
As someone who has threesomed with you, I can concur. But I didn't think it was too much. I thought, you know that OkCupid question that's like, how much communication do you need during sex? And one of the answers is like, just enough to get it right. But then another one is like, a lot. And I'm always like, sometimes you need a lot to get it right.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like, but also like, sometimes people are hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just remember us heckling each other and making jokes the whole time we were threesoming, and that's pretty ideal.
Yeah, it was great. And the other thing with that question is, like, silent sex is not my jam. Like, dirty talk, please, all the time, for always and forever.
Yeah, when I picture sex that's entirely silent, I really just think I would be fantasizing the whole time. Like, I don't know what else I would be thinking about or mentally doing. Like,
I would be imagining all of the filthy things that person should be saying to me.
Right, exactly. Or a different person should be saying to you, because...
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That too.
So today, we're talking about ruining the mood, which is a phrase that comes up so often when talking about... dirty talk and consent negotiations and humor as it pertains to sex, and like people are just
I feel like I hear it all the time as a sex educator. Just like every time I'm like, hey, try, they're like, that would ruin the mood. No. And I'm like, okay, well, try this. No, that mood is ruined. It's ruining it. It's gonna ruin everything. I'm like, what? Try talking to the human that you're naked next to. Oh, mm-hmm. See, the mood. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about it. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this mood?
I can kind of get that. Like, I can get feeling apprehensive about talking about sex while sex is going on. Because, like, certainly I am anxious, and sometimes it feels almost physically impossible to get those words out of my mouth. So a thing I do sometimes is I close my eyes and say what I need to say. Or I'll say, I have something really difficult I need to tell you, so I need you to turn and look the other way, and then I'm going to say it. But that's, for me, that's not so much ruining the mood as it is making myself deeply uncomfortable in the service of something I know is good, ultimately. I'm very confused about people who don't want to talk to their partners during sex. Because I'm like, oh, so you're mature enough to bang each other, but you're not mature enough to talk about banging each other. Okay.
No, that would be awkward.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about this phrase, ruining the mood? Is it a thing? Is the mood ruinable?
Okay. I mean, end of the day, yeah. But, like, not nearly as easily as everyone seems to think.
Yes.
Like, I think if you're having sex where the mood is, like, crystal, fragile, precious gem that we need to cushion in, like, padding and protect with our lives, like, that's not a mood. That's not fun. That's... Mm-hmm. If I have to constantly be thinking about preserving whatever, and this is coming from someone who role plays a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I do all kinds of DS dynamics and stuff, and, you know, I'm a pup and all of these things. So, like, I am creating this, like, fictional environment, and even I'm not afraid of ruining that, let alone, like, just plain old vanilla sex and whatever. Mm-hmm. I think people worry more about the mood and whatever that is than they actually have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you were talking about role-playing, I was reminded of my experience with improv. And the whole idea with improv is to say yes and, like, to agree with what the person has just said and expand upon it. And really the only way you can ruin a scene, which first of all, no one's ever really going to accuse you of having ruined a scene in improv, because an improv scene is a group effort. If it's ruined, it's because everyone was fucking up, and usually they're just laughing about it. But the only way you can really ruin a scene is by blocking an offer, which is where you say, like if I said to you, thanks for taking me to this super cool farm on this field trip. And if you were just like, we're not at a farm, we're at a mall. Like, that's ruining the scene because you've just completely shut down the offer I made. And I think in my experience, a lot of what ruins the mood during sex is, like, really shutting someone down, which is not to say that you can't say no to things, of course. But if someone makes a fun offer in bed, and I'm like, absolutely not. I do not want to do that thing. And then I don't.
That is, like, so gross. Why would you even think of that?
Right. Like, if I feel like if you do that, you need to, like, provide an alternative solution. Like, I don't know if I'm really in the mood for that particular thing, but let's try this other thing. Or, like, be verbally affirming and say, I'm not really feeling that thing tonight, but, like, some other time I might really want to do that. Like, I think if you're having sex with someone, presumably you like them and want to be having sex with them.
Or hopefully. At least, like, pretend you do. God.
And I think, like, the idea of ruining the mood is based on this idea that, like, someone's opinion of you is so fragile that any little thing is going to, like, rock the boat and cause them to lose their attraction to you. And that's not usually how it works. Like, people I'm attracted to, it's usually a pretty rock-solid attraction. I've had people I think are hot say really weird, strange things to me during sex, and most of the time, if I'm really into them, I just kind of laugh it off and keep going.
I find it charming.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, that was weird, but okay.
What a weirdo. And yeah. I think the other thing, like, so one of the things I practice when I'm feeling anxious is, and then what? Which I've heard a lot of places, but most recently on Poly Weekly, mm-hmm. which is you play the, okay, everything is awful. The thing I'm afraid of is true. And then what will happen?
Mm.
Okay, well, I could cope with that. So, you know, all right, like, this person secretly does hate me and never wants to talk to me anymore. And then what? Well, then I'm not going to talk to him anymore. And I don't have to stress about them anymore. And then what? Oh, and then I'm going to die alone. Like, whatever the weird progression is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fear with people with ruining the mood is, like, all right, I'm going to say a thing, and they're not going to like it. And then what? They're going to put on their pants and run out the door, and I will never see this human being again for the rest of days. And then what? And then they will tell everyone, and no one will talk to me anymore. And, like, you play with it, and it just continuously gets more and more ridiculous, right? Like, uh-huh. 99% of those things are never going to happen. Like, the weirdest thing that might happen if you say something that ruins the mood is you two will laugh for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the probability of you saying something relatively benign and someone just, like, putting on their pants and walking out is not highly likely.
Well, I mean, I actually did do that one time because someone said something disastrously bad during sex.
Well, right, but that wasn't a fairly benign thing. Like, I think there are pretty extreme things that maybe don't roll out in the middle of sex.
I mean, I think he thought it was a benign thing, but I think I'm going to tell that story a little bit later.
Yeah.
So let's talk about laughing and humor and goofiness during sex. We did a whole episode about humor and how humor plays into our attraction. So there's a lot more of that there if you want to go check that out. But people often think that making jokes during sex or laughing during sex ruins the mood. What's your take on that?
I think if you're with someone that you're so afraid to even, like, laughing for me is an expression of joy, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sex is fun. Mm-hmm. How can that be? Yep. If you're with someone that you can't even express joy that you're there, if that is going to ruin everything, I probably don't want to be naked with that person. Like, I mean, there is something to be said for, like, you know, serious DS stuff or, like, really aggressive sex or whatever, but, like, even when I'm getting spanked, I'm gonna giggle.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, I've taken to telling new partners in advance of sex, or, like, sometimes while the pre-sex makeouts are happening. Like, just so you know, I'm really giggly. I giggle most of the way through sex, even, like, intense kink sex that is supposed to be more serious, some people say. 'Cause I just find especially some guys, like, get really uncomfortable about that because they think I'm laughing at them or laughing at something they've said or mocking their dick or something. I don't know what they think, but I used to have this partner who just, like, every time I would giggle during sex, he would stop the whole thing that he was doing and be like, "What? What's so funny?" And he wasn't funny, so it definitely wasn't him. I was honestly just having a good time and having, like, an exhilaration response, which,
yeah, I giggle on roller coasters too.
Right, exactly. Like, it's just a thing that I do. And so I find, like, telling people up front that I giggle is helpful to them, because if I explain it's a thing I do when I'm having fun, then they start to recognize that when it happens and then maybe feel good about it instead of feeling nervous about it. Because I can get, like, feeling nervous if you think someone's laughing at you. As a person with anxiety, oh, I've definitely 100% felt that. So I think it's helpful to, like, lay it out in advance. Like, I am not laughing at your dick. Or if I am, it's only because I find your dick so delightful that I need to giggle. I have nothing else I can do with these feelings.
Giggle is just an expression of all of my dick feelings bubbling up inside me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do think that kind of meta communication can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
One thing Midori asks before getting into a scene is she'll ask her play partner, what will this look like if you're having a good time? Ooh. And what will this look like if something goes wrong?
That's such a good question.
Right? Because for some people, silence is, like, that they're really into it, right? They've fallen into subspace and they're really experiencing everything or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
For me, if I'm silent, it means I need to say a thing and I'm too scared to say it.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And knowing the difference, knowing if you should appreciate that silence or if you should go, you know, yo, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Say the thing.
Yeah.
Because for me, being prompted will make me actually say it if someone asks me.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, knowing the difference of that, I think, is really, really important. So that kind of meta communication, especially if you're going into a kink thing, mm-hmm. can be really helpful.
Yeah. I will say about laughing, too, that just, like, because of the way breath works in the human body, I do find it difficult to actually, like, move toward orgasm while laughing. So sometimes if I have a partner who's just extremely funny and cracking jokes the whole time, which, because of the type of person I date, happens to me a lot, sometimes I'll be like, okay, seriously though, I need you to stop making jokes and just fuck me with that dildo for a while and not fucking say anything unless it's gonna be a dirty thing. Because if I'm laughing, like, first of all, I'm not really moving toward orgasm, but also the dildo is, like, shaking in and out of me, or whatever's inside me is, like, being expunged from me because I laugh so hard that that's what happens to my vag muscles, apparently.
Yeah, there definitely is a difference between, like, giggly fun sex and sex that's gonna get me off.
Right.
And I think creating space for both of those things is important.
Yeah.
Like, not treating one as bad or wrong or whatever. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I think for me, my sex is generally less giggly than yours.
Do we know that for sure?
What?
Do we know that for sure? We have no way of knowing that.
I'm pretty sure. I've seen you have sex. I think I need to have the freedom to still be able to express that kind of joy and to still be able to, like, if something hilarious happens, make a joke about it or mm-hmm. say a weird thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that just, for me, betrays a kind of comfort with my partner. Like, if
yeah.
I feel like I can do those things, that's, like, that's how I know I'm comfortable and in a good place, if I can say those things. Or even just... I think the other thing people talk about ruining the mood is, like, conversations about just what you need, and if those needs are, like, you know, fuck me deeper, people will be like, all right, that's kind of okay, like, that's fine, but if the needs are, like, hang on a sec, I gotta pee, like, that's gonna fuck everything up, or, like, my fingers are going a little numb, can you loosen this rope a little bit here, or whatever, like, candid right. communication about stuff like that, people are like, oh, God, you can't say that.
Yeah, I get a little weird sometimes about, like, when a partner's doing stuff to me and trying to get me off, it's usually not, like, a linear ascent to orgasm. Like, usually it's kind of like, we go for a little while, and then I need to take a breather for a couple minutes, and then we keep going, and then maybe another breather. And sometimes, especially with partners I don't know very well, I get uncomfortable communicating, like, actually, can we just not do stuff for a couple minutes, because I just need to catch my breath, and... because sometimes partners get very intense about wanting to get me off and just want to keep doing it and keep doing it. And I find that those breathers are, like, such perfect moments for, like, jokes and relaxing. Because, like, the whole point of taking a moment is to kind of relax and catch my breath. And it's so nice to not have that be an awkward thing where the person's just, like, waiting for you to be ready again. Like, that's yeah. ideal opportunities for jokes. What about... Yeah. consent conversations, though, because this is where people, I think, get really uncomfortable that they're going to ruin the mood by, like, trying to get verbal consent. And it's like, I feel like that is a mood worth ruining. If that's the thing that's going to ruin the mood, it should be ruined. Like, consent yeah. is the most important and mandatory and basic thing. You need to get it by any means necessary. And if you don't, then you need to stop. And so it's like, if you're worried that asking someone if they consent to a particular thing is going to ruin the mood, you should be worried about whether they're consenting to you at all and whether they want to be having sex with you at all.
Yeah, and, like, okay, we're not the first people to talk about this concept, but so many people assume asking for consent means, like, stopping everything and sitting down with, like, a pen and paper and being like, will you allow? Uh-huh, excellent. What about, can I stick a finger in your butt? Great, good. What about oral? How do you feel about blowjobs? Giving? Good. Receiving? Okay. Like,
that judgmental noise. You would do that too.
That's not how, like, that's not how asking for consent needs to be. I mean, it can be. Mm-hmm. Yes, no, maybe lists are an awesome way to kind of get an idea of what those conversations will look like later on. Mm-hmm. But, like, I was at a queer burlesque show with a friend the other night, mm-hmm. and there were these straight dudes there who were super drunk and also had no idea where they were. Like, had stumbled into this event and were not prepared. But at one point, my friend is also a sex educator, and, like, the dude was like, we're best friends now, and, like, went in to hug them, and they were like, they had, like, a mini consent conversations about, okay, we're gonna teach you about hugs now, and the dude was like, okay, so, like, what do I have to do? Do I have to, like, get out a document, or, and they were like, no, yikes, just no. ask, like, ugh. And the dude got it, but I think accepting that, like, it's totally easy to just say, like, hey, you know, I really want to have sex with you tonight. Would you be cool with that? Like, what are you mm-hmm. down to do tonight? Is a mm-hmm. perfectly valid conversation. But you can also make it a part of your dirty talk. Like, oof. Being, like, having your face inches from someone and having them say, I really want to kiss you right now. Or, what would you do if I kissed you right now? Mm-hmm. That's not going to ruin any mood. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, sitting in someone's lap and being like, I really want to suck your cock. Who's gonna be like, ew. Like, you just made this so awkward, it feels really clinical when you talk about your tongue on my cock. Like, it's not gonna happen.
I agree. That is, in fact, my favorite script for getting consent from other people and also for them getting it from me. Because it's so low pressure. So, like, I was out on a date last week, and we were like making out in an alley, and I wasn't really sure I wanted to have sex with him that night because I have some weird feelings about sex on a first date. And he said something to me while we were making out, something like, "Oh, I really want to take you home and fuck your brains out." And I was like, "Well, I don't know that I want to do that. I'm having fun making out." And I felt like the way that he phrased it was low pressure enough that I didn't feel weird about saying no, and I didn't feel like I was, like, you know, doing a record scratch and, like, stopping the whole action by saying no, because I was saying no to this particular thing you have proposed, but let's do this other thing now. Although I should say, the makeouts were pretty good, and then I ended up going home with him, and he did fuck my brains out. But well, I it was nice that I felt comfortable giving that no in that moment. And it's I just love the when you're making out with someone and you say, "I really want to go down on you," and then just wait and see what they say. I don't think I've ever had someone say no to that, but I also think if someone did, I wouldn't be heartbroken or anxious about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because you can even, like, you don't even have to be like, no. Like, you can just, like, you can respond to something with that, like, "Yeah, well, I really want to finger you right now." Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like a redirect, like,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, like, accepting it and also being like, "Well, I want to do this thing. What do you think about that?" You know? Mm-hmm. And it's just an expression of desires without the need to act on them immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about redirects a lot when I banged the aforementioned dude last week because, he's very, like, dommy, and he was bossing me around, and at one point he, like, wanted me to get on top of him, and that's something I don't really like doing because I have a hip condition, and so, like, that position is often very uncomfortable or painful for me. And that's a thing that I do often feel weird about disclosing during sex. Like, it does feel like almost like a mood ruiner, because it often comes up with dudes who really, really like to have a lady on top of them. And they've asked me to do this, and I have to be like, "Actually, that's painful for me. Let's do something else." But in this particular case, like, I was, like, blindfolded and cuffed, and he was like, "Okay, you're on top," and kind of, like, manhandled me on top of him. And I was like, "Actually, this is a thing that's painful for me because I have a hip condition." And he was like, "All right, different position." He just, like, grabbed me and move me into a different position. I was like, "You dealt with that well. That was good."
Yep. Yeah, and the other thing about these kinds of conversations, like, A, when I feel comfy enough to have them, or when someone else initiates them, like consent conversations and even safer sex conversations,
mm-hmm.
it, like, it almost enhances the mood for me, because it's like, great, this is not someone who's going to find these things weird,
mm-hmm.
and that's not something I need to be anxious about, because we've talked about it.
Right.
Like, gaming out a few, like, getting the chance in a kink thing to be like, "Hey, I like objectification, but not humiliation," means mm-hmm. I'm not going to spend the entire time while they're calling me a dirty slut, which is the kind of humiliation. It's not humiliating to me, so it's the kind of stuff that's generally called humiliating that I'm into.
Mm-hmm.
Worrying, I'm not going to spend that whole time worrying that they're going to tip over into something like being like, "And you're useless, and I hate you, and you're garbage, and you're like the mud under my feet," and I'm just going to be like, "Why? I thought I was cute." You know, so just like knowing that that stuff is in the open enhances the mood for me, because it means that I know the scene is going to go in a way that I want it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the more that you have these conversations with a partner, the more comfortable you feel having them with that particular partner. Like, if I'm with a dommy dude and I have given him instructions a few times during a scene, then I know that I can continue to do that, as opposed to feeling kind of frozen and like I have to consistently maintain a sense of subservience in order to keep the scene going.
That's the other thing, like, being submissive and being allowed to have opinions or not.
Right.
Like, are you invalidating their dominance by, like, giving feedback?
Yeah, I was having this conversation with, like, a dommy dude one time. This wasn't even during sex, but it kind of got me thinking about like, kink communication. Because I made, like, a bad joke, and, like, someone in the group called me an awkward turtle. And I was like, "Oh, no, I'm not an awkward turtle. I'm an awkward bunny. I identify as an awkward bunny. And bunny is actually, like, one of my kink honorifics. It's something that I like to be called in bed. So this, like, dommy guy who was there with me, he, like, turned and looked at me. He was like, a bunny, huh? I can see that. I've had situations like that in kink scenes as well, where, like, someone calls me a particular name, and I'm like, oh, no, that's not what I am. I'm actually a princess. And then they just roll with it and keep going, and I'm like, yes, good for you.
Remember that time I yelled at someone and told them you were a princess?
I was wearing a crown, and this guy, like, we were
both
wearing crowns.
Who should have known better?
Yes, he was my dom at the time, basically. And we were both wearing crowns at this party, and he says to you and me, he's like, how is the king and the queen? And you're like, she's not a queen, she's a princess.
How dare you? I was outraged. Also possibly drunk, I'm not sure.
Oh, well, I mean, yes.
I was like, excuse you.
What about, you mentioned safer sex conversations. I'm curious if you have ways to bring up that convo without ruining the mood, because that, in my experience, that can be an awkward thing, but it, you know, totally doesn't have to be.
Yeah, that one's hard for me, too.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to try and bring it up, like, at the beginning, once it... See, the thing is, like, the thing that is difficult for me with safer sex conversations is that you are explicitly acknowledging that you're about to have sex with that person.
Right, yeah.
And
there's
it feels
no chill
presumptuous.
To it. Yeah.
Like, it feels like... I mean, we're making out and your hand is in my pants, but, like, do you want to fuck me, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which may sound weird to people without anxiety, however. So, like, I think one of the easiest ways is to start with your own information rather than starting with a question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, the last time I got tested was XYZ. I tested negative for XY and maybe positive. And, you know, if you tested positive for something, like, any relevant information they might want to know around that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I use, and this is basically Reid Mahalko's Safer Sex Elevator speech. You know, I use XYZ kind of barriers for protection, and I'm comfortable with that. And then the thing I really like is that he adds in things he's down to do that night and things he's like excited to do and like limits that he might have.
Mm-hmm.
And then says, and how about you? Because A, you're giving them all the information that you want from them without it feeling like an interrogation, right? You're not pop quizzing them.
Mm-hmm.
But you listed all this information about yourself, so they know the kind of things that you want them to tell you. And B, you're integrating these sexy things into it, so it's not like a clinical thing. It can be like, you know, hey, last time I was tested was 6 weeks ago. I haven't engaged in any risky behaviors since then. I use barriers for any sort of penetration. I don't usually use them for oral, but I'm comfortable doing it. If you are, today I'm really down to suck your cock. But I'm not a big fan of gagging, so mm-hmm. I want to be in more control with something like that. How about you?
Yeah, that's so good, and it's sexy, and it reminds me of, like, when you're really excited to go see a movie, and then you, like, watch a trailer for the movie and, like, read some reviews of the movie, and then you're even more excited to go see it. It's like this little preview, verbally, of some things that might happen. So it, like, keeps the mood high while still communicating the information that needs to be communicated. I like that. Reid Mahalko's a smart guy.
Yeah, and I like that it ends on, like, the sexy bits. Like, you open with, like, stuff that may not turn people on, but, like, you're just like, oh, these things. And also, I want your dick in my mouth. So, let's talk about that, you know?
Yeah.
Because it, like, brings it back around to, like, this is still hot, and this is a sexy thing that we're doing.
Yeah. I had a weird, like, safer sex disclosure thing at my date last week, actually. I was, like, we were having this intense conversation over drinks about sex toys, because he knows that I'm involved in that world. And I started to talk about the Wee Vibe Tango, which is one of my favorite toys, and it's actually usually the one that I bring with me if I think I might be having sex. So I'm telling him very enthusiastically about the Wee Vibe Tango, and then I go, oh, actually, there's one in my bag right now, because I'm a weirdo. It's in there with my condoms. and we had not discussed that. that we were going to be banging, but it was like, you know, an OkCupid date, so it was possibly going to happen. But I was like proud of myself for how casually I just threw that in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I also really like, I like doing things like that, and I also like, because sometimes, something I struggle with a lot when I'm hooking up with people for, like, the first time or whatever is sometimes stepping up to what feels like the next tier of things, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Moving from making out to maybe oral, or moving from oral to, like, penetration or mm-hmm. whatever. So saying something like, hey, do you want me to grab us a condom?
Mm-hmm.
is a great way to be like, put your dick in one of my holes, please. Can that be a thing? Can we do that? You know?
Yeah.
So, like, it kind of integrates those in a way that is really helpful, because we're talking about, like, my safer sex needs, and also, like, it's exciting because it's like, hey, I want to do this thing.
Right. Or like, hey, I would really love to grab a condom and put it on you and then for you to fuck me really hard from behind. How would you feel about that?
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
Just coincidentally.
Yeah. So how do you communicate during sex about what you want in terms of, like, actual mechanical adjustments? Like, you know, we talk about how I like it really deep to hit my A spot, or you like it really hard and fast on your G spot. Like, some of those things are sexy to communicate and some of them are less so. Do you have, like, hot ways that you like to talk about those things?
I mean, so you always hear in feedback the compliment sandwich.
Yes.
Right?
I love that.
It works when you're naked, too. Coincidentally.
You can also eat a sandwich while you're naked. You might get crumbs on you, but still delicious.
I do love sandwiches. I'm going to go make a sandwich.
Oh, sandwiches. Fuck yes. I can set to sandwiches.
Anyway. So saying things like, you know, oh my God, that feels so good. Can you go even harder?
Mm.
You know? Or positive feedback for when they do the right thing. Even if it's only for a second,
yeah.
Right? Or even if they did it last time you fucked, you know? Like, oh my God, it feels so good when you go really hard like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, even honestly, if they're not going that hard, you can be like, God, when you go hard, it feels so good. Can you go even harder? Like, you know, just like, okay, please, though, please.
Yeah.
So, like, complimenting the things that they do well.
Mm-hmm.
I always talk about how when you're giving feedback, unless someone does something atrociously, like, wrong and, like, painful or whatever, mm-hmm. you never want to be like, no, God, what are you doing? Why would you even do that? Why would you think, I want half circles on my clit? Are you out of your mind? I'm clearly a diagonal kind of person. Didn't you know? Like, that's rude unless that's their kink. So always, like, focusing on the positive feedback, and, like, I like to integrate it into dirty talk.
Mm.
You know, or things like, you know, it would be so hot right now
mm-hmm.
if you
yeah.
blank.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know what I was thinking about the other day? How hot it would be if you...
Yeah, that's
things like
one.
That is really fun.
You can even sext that, like, a few hours before you're going to see them, or a few days before or whatever, and kind of prime the pump for them to do that thing.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit in our sexting episode, how mm-hmm. some of that can be, like, negotiation and, like, prep for, like, hey, these are the things I like, mm-hmm. just so you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also really like this trick that I think I've talked about before that my fuck buddy did one time that I at the time thought was hilarious, but later came to understand, where, like, I was blowing him and he said, I can feel your tongue. And I was like, well, lol, of course you can. But what he was actually doing was, like, bringing my attention to my tongue because he wanted more tongue. And I thought that was actually, like, quite a smooth way of doing that. Because, like, me being a subby good girl, of course, if someone kind of compliments a thing that I'm doing, I'm going to want to do it better and more. And I think that that's true for a lot of people. There's this psychological concept called self-efficacy. I think that's how it's pronounced. Where if you believe yourself to be good at a thing, you'll do it more often. So actually, if you compliment something on someone that they're doing, even if they're not actually amazing at it, they'll want to do it more. And mm-hmm. I find that helpful in feedback. Another thing I really like that you taught me is the question, do you want to see me come? Or like, do you want to yeah. make me come? Or do you want me to come for you? Whatever. Because then, of course, they're going to say yes. And then you get to be like, okay, let's do this. Or I'm going to go get my vibe. Or do this thing. So like, I was fucking this guy last week and he was fucking me for a while. And I was like, do you want to see me come? And of course he says yes. So I grab my vibe and I go, okay, fuck me deeper, faster, whatever I needed him to do. And as I was getting close to coming, I was starting to get a little bit anxious about how long I was taking. So I kind of did this check-in that like didn't ruin the mood, where I was like, you want me to come all over your cock? And he's like, oh yeah, that would turn me on so much. And then that is my verbal confirmation that yes, he still wants to make me come and isn't getting tired. So I continued to vibe myself into orgasm, and that was actually really, really good, because at no point did I feel like the mood was being broken or ruined at all. Like, it was just, it was continual dirty talk, but also checking in.
God, I love dirty talk.
The other thing I really, I find myself saying right there a lot during sex, if indeed they are on the spot where I want them, because I think it's like really sexy. It's a thing that even when I'm saying it, it turns me on to say it. And I think that it also turns on my partner. So that comes out of my mouth a lot. Woof, I'm getting a little sweaty over here.
Well, let's bring things down a little bit, because we've spent a lot of time talking about how dare you be turned on.
Let's God. Ruin the mood of this podcast.
We're talking about sex. Yeah. This is serious. we've talked a lot about how, like, ruining the mood is not so much a thing as so many people think it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a thing that happens nearly as often as people seem afraid that it would. But, like, has anyone ever ruined the mood for you?
Yes. So, I've definitely ruined the mood for myself unintentionally. I used to sometimes listen to music on shuffle during sex, which you should just fucking never, ever do. It's too risky. You gotta make a playlist and shuffle only within that playlist. I've learned it now, but bad music, it can really fuck shit up. I always remember this time. I actually had this song on my sex playlist, so it was my sex playlist. It just apparently didn't turn my partner on.
You just make bad decisions.
So a song that I have on my sex playlist is Let's Get It On, but it's not the Marvin Gaye version. It's the version from the movie High Fidelity, which is Jack Black singing Let's Get It On. And, like, to be fair, it's a fucking great version of the song. But as soon as you realize it's Jack Black, you kind of can't unsee that it's Jack Black. And I always remember that, like, I had a partner who was going down on me and this song came up on shuffle. And my partner literally lifted his head from between my legs and was like, what is this? And I've had, like, I'm a musician.
So you just put your thighs over his ears and just like, shh, it's fine.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
Just let me think about Jack Black, okay? Like, it's fine. I sometimes, because I'm a musician, occasionally my own music comes up on shuffle, and that's like a definite mood killer for me. And I always remember, too, speaking of bad music, the hookup that I had in Minneapolis with this Tinder dude. He put on Spotify, but he had not paid for, like, subscription Spotify, which I think is only $10 every 3 months or something. It's not that much, but whatever. So the thing with non-subscription Spotify is that every three-ish songs, this, like, lady voice comes on and is like, it's like an ad telling you that you should subscribe to Spotify. and it's, like, every two or three songs. And the dude was listening to, like, white boy rap that I was super really not into. So I was laughing at the music, and then the ads would come on, and I would laugh at that. And I was like, dude, like, you don't have, like, a CD or something? Like, we don't even have
to listen to music. A cassette, goddammit, come on!
It's so distracting. Like, is this your kink? Like, not trying to kink shame, but, like,
we're
what is going
with the Spotify
with
lady.
And then, if I may tell the gloopy story.
Ugh, let's go with the gloop.
I may have told this on the show before, but this is actually the foremost example from my life of a time when a partner really fucking ruined the mood. We were banging. He was like a dommy partner to me, and he was like fingering me, and I was kind of getting close to orgasm. So, like, I was wet, you know, like vaginas sometimes get wet when they're turned on, you know. And he keeps
really?
He keeps stopping and starting, and he's just being weird. And I'm like, what's going on? What's wrong? And he's like, oh, you're just really gloopy today. And I didn't even really have a response to that, because, like, yeah, bro, I'm wet because you're finger banging me, and I'm getting close to coming, but okay. And then he's, like, still stopping and starting and just seems really, like, grossed out and, like, put off. He, like, takes his hand out of me, grabs a tissue, like, wipes his hand off, wipes me off, and then tries to go back to finger banging me. And I'm there, like, dude, like, okay, I was having some, like, adult baby feelings about him having wiped my vulva, and I'm not an adult baby fetishist. It's not a kink that I have. It's not something we had negotiated. Also, like, why are you so concerned that the person you're banging is turned on? Like, every dude I've told this story to has been horrified. They're like, she was wet, bro, what are you doing? And I'm like, I know.
And, like, you don't get rid of that. That's gonna make everything less comfortable.
Yeah, I don't know what this dude's deal was. He had some, like, kind of, like, strange to me hygiene things about sex where, like, he kept wet wipes next to the bed and always liked to, like, clean up immediately after sex and, like, sometimes go have a shower or whatever. I can kind of get it if you have, like, weird sensory perception, like, it, not weird, but, like, if certain sensory things make you uncomfortable or gross you out. But I really don't think that it was appropriate for him to, like, put that on me and make me feel bad. So what ended up happening was, like, I was so upset by this and felt so shamed and gross that I completely lost any sense of arousal that I had. And it kind of went on for, like, a couple more minutes, and then I was like, you know what? I'm not feeling this. We have to stop. And then he laid beside me, and we just, like, laid in awkward silence for a couple minutes. And I was, like, in subspace. We had been doing some kinks shit, so, like, I was not in a good place to emotionally process this. But I was like, I don't want to be around you right now. I feel really uncomfortable and unsafe and gross being around you. So I put my clothes on, I got up and left. And that was the last time I had sex with that guy. And he had been a regular fuck buddy for, like, months. And that was just, I couldn't have sex with him anymore after that. That was, like, so upsetting to me.
And I think for context, like, this isn't the first only, like, not sexy thing he had done.
No.
And this, like, wasn't someone that you were super into who fucked up and said a weird thing once.
It's true. I wasn't like super emotionally into him. We had good sex, which is why I kept coming back. But I honestly think that if someone I was really attracted to had done that, I would also have been upset. I would have probably put more effort into trying to explain to them why I had found it upsetting and why it wasn't okay. And I would have probably tried to fix it. But I wasn't into him, so I didn't have sort of the emotional energy to try to solve that or talk through it at all. But, like, I think the real thing that made it a mood ruiner was that it was a body shaming thing. I just think you can't shame someone about their body during sex, whether indirectly or directly, whether implicitly or explicitly, whether on purpose or by accident. Like, you can't, because so many people have shitty feelings about their bodies because of this culture we live in, and sex is a really vulnerable time, and you have to be so careful to not say anything shitty about anyone's body. I don't think that that's that difficult. I think you need to be super affirming about someone's body while you're banging them. That's,
yeah,
it's just, like, vital. It's 101. It's basic. You need to do that. I feel better. I have catharted that story from my heart. How about you? Has the mood ever been ruined for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that comes to mind is semi-recent, and it didn't catastrophically destroy the mood, like what you're talking about, but it was kind of a weird body thing that definitely made shit weird. I was at a queer and trans play party, playing with someone that, like, I had just met and picked up there, like, this really pretty girl, and she, like, in the middle of spanking me, misgendered me, which I think I had told her my pronouns, but maybe not. Like, there was a lot going on and, like, whatever. So I kind of said, like, it took me a second and I, like, said a thing and was like, can you not she? No. And she was like, oh, okay. And, like, went back and it was totally fine. And, like, we recouped from that and whatever. And then a little while later, we were at, like, a little more alone and kind of making out. And it was kind of clear that she didn't have a ton of experience with, like, trans or gender nonconforming people. Mm-hmm. And wound up putting me in a place where I needed to kind of educate.
Yeah.
Which it's not the first time something like this has happened, either around my transness or around kink or anything like that. But there are sexy ways to ask, okay, how do I interact with your body? Like, mm-hmm. You know, being like, saying things like, where do you want me to touch you? Or what words do you want me to use? Or mm-hmm. things like that. Or, you know, that, or like, even just, like, how do you like to have sex? And, like, which is an open-ended question that's kind of difficult. But, like, yeah. Even things like that. Really hot. But, like, so, are you going to go on hormones? Do you want surgery? And then, like, an important question, like, how do you feel about penetration? Great. But, like, when I was like, no, I'm pretty cool with that. Well, like, don't you feel disconnected and uncomfortable with that part of your body?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't until you started talking about it. I was doing great, but, like, thanks for bringing that up. Like,
That's such personal stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to know about that stuff to bang someone. Oh, my God.
Right? And, like, stuff that, like, we could maybe discuss over coffee. Mm-hmm. But, like, still, like, when I'm, like, I've got you on a spanking bench and I'm making out with you, maybe. Don't ask my feelings about surgery, because you know what? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not ready to unpack that right now. And even, like, I made a comment about my packer, like, jokingly, whatever. I think I said, I told them the story of how I had accidentally stored my packer next to my weed, so then my dick smelt like weed for a few days. It finally almost doesn't, which is cool.
Yeah.
Like, I boiled it. Nothing saved it. But, like, I said that, like, haha, isn't that funny? Okay, let's get back to making out, whatever. And they were like, oh, do you have a packer? Do you wear that every day? And I was like, yeah, like, usually. And they were just like, whoa, so, like, you're wearing it right now? Yup. They're like, can I touch it? Well, I was kind of fucking hoping you would. Like, isn't that why we're here?
Yikes.
It was a lot. Like, we wound up still making out, and, like, we might meet up again, I don't know. But I was like, I don't know, I was trying, like, desperately to hang on to the mood, and at one point they're like, ooh, you're getting, like, kind of dommy, and I was like, yeah, well, you weren't doing it.
Somebody's gotta do it.
They're like, I like it. I'm like, great, good, focus on making out with me again, please. Love of God.
Fuck that, and fuck yeah is our weekly segment where we tell you something we hate and something we love. What is your fuck that this week?
My fuck that is every time I was afraid to speak up because I was afraid it would ruin the mood or, like, more importantly, weird out the other person.
Yeah.
And then found out later that I totally could have done the thing. Mm-hmm. and have completely missed the opportunity now. I'm thinking specifically, like, times with my sir when we're both sex educators, we should know better. And, like, we had a conversation semi-recently where we were like, so I'm kind of into this, like, kind of edgy thing and was really thinking about doing that last time we were together, but it's, like, sort of edge play and kind of a lot, so, like, I didn't say the thing. And then I forget who, like, initiated it, but the other person was just like, oh, yeah, no, I was totally fantasizing about that same thing when we were together, but, like, I figured you weren't into it, and I was like, but now, what the, look at, like, how many times have I told people, just say the thing, right?
Yeah.
Just communicate, talk to your partner, mm-hmm. use your words. And here we are, two sex educators being like, but that's scary. We don't wanna. Like, totally missed the chance to try this thing that we're gonna, like, try again in the future and, like, haven't completely blown the opportunity. Mm-hmm. But,
like, to be fair, it is scary, and you're allowed to be a human, and you're allowed to have human feelings like fear and anxiety and apprehension. But, yeah, in my experience, usually asking for the thing produces better results than not asking for it. Like, you know, like, you gotta take the leap, and often you'll have some kind of intuitive sense of how the person will respond. And if they're into you, I feel like odds are in your favor usually. So might as well give it a shot.
Something Cooper, who's been on the show from Life on the Swing Set, talks about is how he looks at it like a numbers game, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a chance that he asks a thing, and they might say yes, or they might say no, and you got, like, maybe a 50-50 shot either way.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ask for the thing, and you're definitely not getting the thing.
Right.
So there's some certainty there. However, with the other opportunity, there's a chance you get to do the thing.
Mm-hmm. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yes.
Yes.
I learned that in an elementary school poster.
Okay. I learned it from The Office. But...
oh, okay. No, my elementary school had all of those little inspirational things. Also, like, shoot for the moon and up around the stars.
That's not what the phrase is, but okay.
I saw a thing that was like, I forget where I heard it, but they were like, you know, shoot for the moon, you won't end up among the stars because they're much further away than the moon.
Are they? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh no, that's so upsetting.
Anyway, what's your fuck that?
My fuck that is my lack of understanding of astrophysics. No, I'm just joking. My fuck that is the mid-sex phone call.
Oh.
So this doesn't happen to me as much anymore because it's 2017 and who the fuck calls you on the phone. But the second time I ever had sex in my life, we were filming it because we were very ambitious young things. And we were like midway through foreplay and my mom called. And I was young enough that my mom calling to check in on me was not out of the ordinary, but
and you have to answer.
Yeah, I had to answer and tell her where I was and when I would be home, and you know how that I was safe and whatever. So when you watch the video, it's just me in like dim, sexy lighting taking this awkward phone call, and my partner just sort of sitting beside me, looking nervous and just patiently waiting for the phone call to be over. And when I hang up, like 5 minutes later, because as you know, my mom is very loquacious, yes. We had been like midway through foreplay and my partner's like, so do I have to like start over or do I like start where I was before? And, like, I didn't really know, because like some of my
how
arousal,
do you do this sex thing?
Talking to my mom definitely killed a little bit of my boner. But how much of my boner did it kill? Sometimes you're not sure. But yeah, don't call people when
you're
having sex.
What is the measurement for that? The measurement for how much of a boner has been killed?
I'm just picturing, like, it's a percentage. And it's one of those things, like, that you fill in when you're doing a fundraiser. Like, you fill in it with marker until you reach the top. But then you can, like, erase certain parts of the boner's filling, if you will. A boner's filling. A boner would really fill me up real good right now. What am I even saying? What is your fuck yeah? Is it your best friend and how articulate she is?
Yes, and it is also negotiating kink scenes before you have them.
Mm-hmm.
Or like getting to have the conversation while you could mute back to someone's house. And
so
getting to,
good.
Like, that little window where you get to talk about all the stuff you're gonna do, even if it is, like, relatively clinical negotiation of a kink scene or something, it's still super hot to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be able to be like, I'm gonna do the XYZ, but I don't really like A, B, C, and, like, really articulating the things you like, and then later seeing the person do the things, which, ugh. Oof. Real good.
Yeah.
What's your fuck yeah?
My fuck yeah is the phrase, "Did I say you could stop?" Ooh. Mm. I like this as a way of continuing the mood in situations where it otherwise might be halted. So, like, if, for example, we're doing foreplay things, and a dommy person says, "I'm going to go get a condom, you touch your clit while I go do that." And that's a way of them getting me to perpetuate my own arousal in a moment where they can't because they're busy going and doing another thing. I've also had partners do it if they had to, like, get up and go to the bathroom or whatever. I have this one partner who always washes his dick if we've been doing PIV and he wants me to blow him, because he's very concerned that I might have to taste condom lube on his dick, and he's actually just the biggest sweetheart. But so sometimes dommy partners will tell me to keep touching myself or keep using a vibe on myself while they go and do another thing. And it's such a great way of, like, continuing the sexual momentum of the scene. Because if I am just sitting there waiting for them to get back, I might be, like, emotionally excited for them to get back. But physically, I'm going to kind of start to lose my boner a little bit and lose some headway on the path to orgasm. And them doing that not only keeps me turned on, but also is, like, a hot dommy thing. Oh, it's so good. Mm-hmm. I love it so much. You know what else I love is when listeners send us questions for us to answer on the show.
And guess what? Someone did!
Hooray! I totally didn't know that at all.
Nope. Surprise! Alright, I have it here, so I'm going to read it. I actually just got this one in recently from one of my followers on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "I've been thinking about my sexuality as of late, and I don't know how to make sense of it for myself. I'm attracted to women, but I'm also attracted to genderqueer and non-binary folks and trans women. I don't know how to rationalize this with myself. Do you have any advice?" Which is a question I hear all the time.
Well, first of all, trans women are women, so that's fine.
Yep, you are still attracted to women.
Yeah, they have a crisis about that.
They just have dicks, which is fine.
Yeah, some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, I always hate to be the person who's like, "You don't need a label, fuck labels, just like who you like." Because I don't know if it's my anxiety or my sex nerdiness, but, like, I enjoy having a label. It's comforting to me. And I think when people are like, "You don't need a label," that stresses me out.
To be honest, I've been personally having a lot of feelings about people who say stuff like that, mm-hmm. That you don't need a label or whatever, because I'm seeing it a lot.
Yeah.
And it really, really bothers me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like 90% of the people I see saying they don't need a label are people that have never been marginalized because of their label.
Right, exactly.
And have never needed to find community around something like that, mm-hmm. or they are all of the defaults that people assume, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, why they don't need a label.
Yeah, they've never needed to explain pieces of their identity to people because people just assume that they are those things. Like, oh, obviously, yeah. You're cis, right? Like,
yeah.
So they're like, "Yo, you don't need to call me cis because I just am."
Yeah.
Like, things like that, where it's like, okay, that's... Not needing a label is a hell of a privilege.
Yeah.
That most of us don't get to have.
Mm-hmm. But I think... there has been in recent years, or actually probably for decades, a resurgence of the usage of the word queer as sort of like an open-ended indicator that you're not straight, basically. That your attractions are not limited to cis people of the, quote, opposite gender to you. And I have, at certain times in my life, used that label and found it helpful because it denotes that I'm not straight and that I'm open to things outside of straightness, but it doesn't require me to go into a great amount of detail about what I'm into. So in certain situations where I might not want to go into a lot of detail or might not even know enough about my own attractions at that point to talk about them specifically, the word queer has been helpful to me.
Yeah. So as a person who is non-binary, I have a lot of thoughts around this kind of question, and I get it a lot. And first of all, I'm not going to tell you what you are. That's on you, right?
Yeah.
Figure out, you know, your identity is whatever you feel comfortable around. That said, I could never date someone who identifies as straight.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a lot of people in the world who are particularly cis men, who say they're attracted to non-binary people or genderqueer people or trans women. And what they mean is they're attracted to femininity. They're mm-hmm. attracted to non-binary people who they perceive as women mm-hmm. and can still treat like women, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're attracted to trans women who quote-unquote pass.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're attracted to non-binary folks who maybe toe that androgynous line and it feels a little edgy, but they're still this, like, the picture the media shows of non-binary androgynous folks.
Mm-hmm. Ruby Rose.
Exactly.
Shane from the L Word. Yeah.
So those are things, I think, that are important to kind of think about. Because mm-hmm. for me, I've had a lot of people who it's like, all right, you know, you say you're attracted to me and you're comfortable with, like, you accept the fact that I'm non-binary and it's fine with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you still identify as straight. So to me, that feels like there's a part of you that still sees me as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the part of you that is attracted to me is attracted to what you perceive as a woman, which is kind of icky for me to feel as a non-binary person. So I think it's important to kind of explore stuff like that
mm-hmm.
and things along those lines. And I think queer is a great umbrella term that kind of encompasses a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also articulate that if femness is what you're attracted to, you can articulate that. And there is a word for an orientation that is attracted specifically to femininity.
I think it's gynosexual, which is kind of weird because a lot of people associate the prefix gyno with, like, specifically vaginas. Mm-hmm. But as it's been explained to me in that context, it actually refers to femininity. I'm not entirely sure. I would have to look that up. But, like, I know this because in the past I've toyed with the label androsexual for myself. I don't really feel comfortable using it because I feel like it's, like, a little pretentious and also people don't really know what that means most of the time. But for me, I'm pretty much attracted almost exclusively to masculinity, but just in various bodies and genders, etc. So it's a label that sits well with me. But yeah, it's like weird to have a label that people have never heard of.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of defeats the purpose of having a label unless you only want one to give your own self a feeling of solace. I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. I mean, I think most labels are placeholders for a conversation.
Right.
You know, even when people tell me they're queer, I'm like, cool, what does that mean to you? You know, like, there is a lot more there. So I think it may not be a word that you use all the time, but it may be helpful to kind of have that in your back pocket
mm-hmm.
to kind of describe your sexuality and explore your attractions through that. But yeah, I think as the person on the other end of that attraction, for a lot of people, sometimes it gets really complicated for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think just there are so many words out there for sexuality, and I think queer is a fantastic umbrella term. And I think it's also perfectly okay for you to still be straight. If you're attracted to women and you're attracted to trans women who are women.
Mm-hmm.
That is all under the straight umbrella, and if you're attracted to femininity in non-binary and genderqueer people, I think being upfront and talking about how you still identify as straight might be complicated for some of them and might have some people opt out of partnering with you, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you're wrong or lying or bad if you kind of round yourself up to straight.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So thank you for that question. If you want to send us a question to answer on the show, our email address is thedildorks@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to our show today. My name is Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and my journalism portfolio at katewritesaboutsex.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff at?
I'm Bex. I'm at Bex Talk Sex on Twitter and Instagram. And all of my writing is at BexTalkSex.com. You can also follow both of us together at The Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram. We're also at thedildorks.com and search for The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. You can also find and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thedildorks. There's a ton of really rad options in there. Plus, helps us keep doing what we're doing. I want to give a shout out to some of the people that contributed to the show. We have Mandy Nancy Kenton, who is going to be on the show soon and runs the awesome Funkit toys.
Yay!
We have Jen. We have Epiphora from heyepiphora.com. Emily, Andrew, Stella, who is also going to be on the show soon. And Andrew Gerza from Disability After Dark.
Awesome. Thank you all so much for supporting us. We really appreciate it. Thank you also to Protodome for letting us use his song I Want You in My Bedroom as our theme song. You can find all of his music at protodome.bandcamp.com. And thank you to Amy Gardner at starboots_ on Twitter for doing our art. And thank you to you. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye. I want you in the morning. I ran 3 miles and wanted to die in the middle.
I'm so proud of you, Bean.
My mom was like, are you coming to visit me? I found a place that you can visit for cheap. Do you wanna? Why aren't you? And I was like, okay, I'll look at it later. Well, fine, if you don't wanna come visit me. I'm running 3 miles. I'm busy.
You could run all the way to where she lives.
She's like, oh, well, that's impressive. I'm like, shut up. I'm actually dying.
I love your impression of your mom because now I know how spot on it is.
That's how she sounds in my head.